Welcome to another episode of the MDS podcast, the official podcast of the International Parkinson's and Movement Disorder Society. I'm your host, Hugo Morales, and today's episode will explore a pioneering approach to dopaminergic treatment delivery. Although dopamine deficiency has long been associated with Parkinson's disease, oral dopamine cannot cross the digestive and blood-brain barriers as it degrades rapidly. However, a novel experimental strategy pushes these limits by delivering dopamine directly into the brain. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to Professor David Devos from the Parkinson's Disease Center of Excellence at the University of Lille, France. Professor Devos and his team have recently published a paper entitled Intracerebral Ventricular Anaerobic Dopamine in Parkinson's Disease with L-DOPA-related complications, a phase 1 and 2 randomized controlled trial published in Nature Medicine Journal. Professor Devo, thank you very much for coming today to our podcast.
Hello, thank you very much for your invitation.
It's a pleasure. Now, let's start talking about the background and how you have designed this clinical trial, but also for readers and listeners to know about this new compound, the A-dopamine.
Yeah. As we all know, Parkinson's disease is defined by a dopamine deficiency in a nigrostriatal pathway. And we know that dopamine has never been used for 60 years because, first, it does not cross the digestive barrier or the blood-brain barrier, and also because it is rapidly oxidized. So it prevents from using dopamine for several years. And we also know that the oral backbone treatments currently used, or the levodopa or dopaminergic agonists, are leading to complications. We know that 50% of people under dopaminergic agonists have addiction impulse control disorders, and 50% of people under levodopa developed complication with fluctuation dyskinesia within 5 years, and 80% after 10 years. So we have developed a new therapeutic strategy with InBrain Pharma, the startup that I co-founded, to overcome these two challenges. First, an anaerobic dopamine, which allows stabilizing the dopamine to avoid oxidation. So it's a new delivery mode with intracerebral ventricular administration. And we put a small catheter directly in the third ventricle beside the two striatum.
And with this A-dopamine, I assume that there was a good preclinical evidence that improved motor function in these models.
Yeah, so we started with the mouse model, the MPTP model, and then the cis-hydroxydopamine rat model, and then the MPTP monkey model. And in the three models, we were able to find the good dose of dopamine and to restore, in mice and rat monkey, 100% of the motor handicap, notably the limb handicap, and without inducing any dyskinesia. And so, thanks to this preclinical data, we started a phase 1, phase 2 clinical trial in Lille, in the north of France, and in 12 people. The primary criterion was to measure for 7 days the fluctuation, dyskinesia, the off period, and we observed that, first of all, the intracerebral ventricular administration was really safe. It's a neurosurgical procedure based upon the DBS, but less invasive, less dangerous, easier, and which lasts 4 hours. And the safety profile of A-dopamine was amazing. We have no real severe adverse event, only a slight nausea or sleepiness. And then we observed after this phase one that we need a dose from 100, 150 to 250 milligram per 24 hours. We were able to find the best dose during the day and the best dose during the night, according to the needs of the patient. And then they enter phase two. So it was a crossover randomized trial with 1 month with oral treatment or 1 month with A-dopamine with the remaining oral treatment. and we observe benefit with an extra 4.4 hours of perfect control without any dyskinesia, any off. And it was also more than six hours of good autonomy, meaning that the patient were either perfect or slight off or slight dyskinesia. And as compared with optimized oral treatment. And this has never been seen with other device-aided therapies. Of course, this is a phase one, phase two trial, so this needs to be confirmed. But importantly, with this central, personalized supplementation of dopamine, we in fact invented a third therapeutic approach, which is the pharmacological neuromodulation. And this is indeed a world premiere that the feasibility, the high efficacy, and the great safety of direct modulating the neurotransmitter. So we proved that we are able now to directly modify and modulate neurotransmitter in the brain, as exemplified with dopamine for Parkinson's disease.
Yeah. Can I ask, based on an experience for other trials, including for deep brain stimulation, the therapy itself is effective, but sometimes you come across problems with the hardware or the equipment itself rather than the therapy. So did you find anything troublesome regarding the pump or, for example, the connection between the pump and the ventricles?
Yeah, indeed. First of all, as compared with DBS, we don't have any risk of troubleshooting. With DBS, you have to reach less than 1 millimeter to be sure that you are in the posterior lateral part of the subthalamic nucleus. This is not the case here. It's an easy procedure. So you don't have this risk of troubleshooting. And so you're sure to have 100% of benefit. Secondly, regarding the hardware and the pump and the catheter, we had no problem with the catheter. It's a very small one, and it's only crossing 3 centimeters of the cortex, so it's not very invasive, and then it's only in the ventricle system. On the 12 people, we have no problem with catheter, no problem of infection. And the pump, where the biocompatibility between the A-dopamine and the pump has been checked, and it was okay. And the pump half-life is around 5 to 8 years, so like DBS, you need to replace the pump. Indeed, you are right. It is possible to have a pump dysfunction. And then like the pacemaker, you need to withdraw it. And it's a 1 hour surgical procedure.
I have a more practical question. This is something that you may have experienced as well with infusional therapies, intestinal gel, or even subcutaneous levodopa. There's always a titration phase where you're trying to find the right dosage. What was your experience with this A-dopamine delivery? How did you find that window where the patients were more controlled?
Yeah, this is a very good question. It's like George Cotzias. You remember the man in New York City who titrated the dose of levodopa for the first time and proved with a randomized controlled trial that it was effective. We have the same aspect here. We need to take time to titrate the dose of dopamine and to reach high dose to have a very high control. So it is the same spirit here. So we titrate during 2 or 3 months, and we slowly increase the dopamine 10 milligrams twice a week. And doing that, it is very well tolerated. You have sometimes a little nausea for 1 day, and that's it, and a little sleepiness. But if you titrate too rapidly, then you have more vomiting or sleepiness or this kind of adverse event. So when you start also levodopa in an early PD patient at the time of diagnosis, you need to increase the dose slowly. So it is the same spirit here. And then it allowed to find the minimum efficient dose, and it's the same, you know, like any psychotrope.
Can I ask you a question? Now that you've seen these patients in the clinical trial and you had the chance of following them up, I remember reading that nearly 4 years that you follow up these patients after the infusion.
Yeah. You are right to underline this. In fact, you can say it's only a phase one, phase two trial on 12 people. So cautious interpretation, and it is true. But we have a long-term follow-up, more than 4 years, with a lot of refill. I have to say that the patient have a refill. So it's a transcutaneous refill at home by a nurse. It lasts, you know, 10 minutes and every week or 2 weeks. And so we have more than 1,000 of refill without any infection, any problem. And it's a very comfortable for the patient. And so with a long-term follow-up, we also observe that we have no tachyphylaxia, no treatment failure. or no need to increase the dose constantly because the effect is last. So we have a major control of the patient. Obviously, you can see patients that remain totally stable and very autonomous, and some other have other non-dopaminergic complications which are not controlled by dopamine. But remarkably also, we observe that the levodopa and the dopamine act differently. In fact, when we put the patient under a dopamine, we reduce in the phase one, phase two trial, we reduce the oral dose by 60%, which is something. But then on the long term, some patients were on monotherapy of a dopamine, so without any oral treatment, and we observe that we never induce dyskinesia. Even if you put a very high dose of a dopamine, you never induce dyskinesia, and they were calm, no addiction. So we observe that, in fact, L-dopa is not equal to dopamine. In fact, they act differently. When you give a dose of levodopa, either transcutaneously or oral, you induce dyskinesia in this patient, which is not the case with A-dopamine. So they have a different mechanism of action. And in fact, it was also very interesting to observe that in people having dyskinesia, without reducing the oral treatment, just putting A-dopamine small dose, we were decreasing dyskinesia. So it's a double action of A-dopamine, reducing dyskinesia by itself and reducing bradykinesia as well.
That's a very fascinating finding. Who knows, but it could be a sort of downstream pharmacodynamic effect or the central pharmacokinetics. But this is something that was exploring in further studies.
In fact, it opens a new field of research to understand. But in fact, we believe that a large dose of levodopa is not metabolized in dopamine. Levodopa acts directly on some receptor, and there's new papers coming out showing that levodopa can act directly on some like GPR143 receptor or other receptor. And in fact, only a small dose of levodopa is metabolized into dopamine. So this explains different pharmacological profile of these two molecules.
Professor Deva, I have a last question. This is also has practical implication. You were saying that you had an infusion rate for the daytime and then the nighttime. What was the ratio or what is the difference of that stimulation in your patients?
We have a very pragmatical approach from the start because if we invented this treatment, it was just for the patient because we said it would be better for the patient to have all the device inside the body and in order to take the bad drugs to deliver it, what the brain is needed. So it's a very pragmatical approach. And then for the dose, we were also very pragmatical. And though we increased the dose during the day and during the night until they say, well, I'm good. So some patients really don't need high dose of dopamine at night. They are sleeping well. They don't have off period. So we remain at 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams during the night. But some other people have a lot of off period at night and very high need of dopamine. And then for those patients, we put something around 40, 50 milligrams. And so we stopped increasing the dose when they were controlled. But it is now important to validate this first clinical result. And so we are setting up an international phase 3 study that should start in 2026 on 170 patients within Brain Pharma. And it will be a trial, hopefully international, so US, Europe, and Asia.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. And I want to thank Professor Devos for sharing his insights about this double strategy of dopamine delivery. Stay tuned for our next episode where we'll continue exploring the latest advancements in movement disorders. Until then, stay curious and keep learning.
Thank you very much.
The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the International Parkinson and Movement Disorder Society or their affiliated journals, Movement Disorders and Movement Disorders Clinical Practice. Any disclosures of the participants can be found within the episode description located on the MDS website.